Ferris B'nai Torah presents The Shmooze, an engaging and motivating Mussar and Hashkafa series that deals with real-life issues.
The CDs for The Shmooze are sponsored by Mr. and Mrs. Kenny Pinzauer. A pasuk that we read twice a day in Shema says, Yishamru lachem, guard yourself, pen yivte levavchem, lest your hearts become seduced, visartem, and you'll turn away, vavadatem, and you will serve Elohim achirim, foreign gods, vishtachavisem lahem, and you will bow down to them. Rashi explains that this pasuk is actually the pathology of chet, the disease states, the various states of disease that a person will go through. The first is pen yivte levavchem, you'll become seduced, visartem, you'll turn away is the next step. Finally, vavadatem Elohim achirim, you'll come to serve Avodah Zarah, you'll come to serve idols. And Rashi explains very carefully what these three stages are. He says as follows, Yishamru lachem, kiven chitu ochlim v'saveim, when you will eat and be satisfied. Yishamru lachem, be very careful, be on guard. Shelo tivatu, that you shouldn't kick. Shein on the morid b'kadosh baruch hu, because a man does not come to rebel against Hashem, ela mitoch saviyah, except through being satisfied. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, pentocha v'savata, lest you eat and become satisfied, b'karach v'son chayubun, you'll gather much cattle and much sheep, and you'll say, you'll become haughty, and you'll say, who is Hashem? Kochi v'yotzim yodi, my strength did this to me. So Rashi basically is explaining the first step in the downward spiral is a person becomes enveloped in physicality. He becomes wealthy, he becomes sated, he becomes involved in materialism. And at that point, he takes credit for his actions, he takes credit for his great success, and he forgets about Hashem. The second step is visartem, then you'll turn away. Says Rashi, what does that mean? Lifrosh min haTorah. You'll separate from Torah, you'll stop learning Torah. Umitokach, and because of that, vavadatem Elohim achirim, because you'll stop learning Torah, you'll come to serve foreign gods. Kemenshad naporish min haTorah, once man separates from Torah study, holich umedabek bavodes kachovim, he goes and he clings to idol worship. So once you're enveloped in physicality, you get excited about materialism, you stop learning Torah. Once you stop learning Torah, you come to serve idols. Now, if you think about these stages, stage one makes sense. After all, depending on what your value system is, will determine what you're going to aspire to, what you're going to work on. If you're very involved in learning Torah, if you understand that this world is short, and we have a mission, you'll be involved in things of the future. You'll be involved in study. You'll be involved in chesed. You'll be involved in all the greatness of a human. If you become involved in materialism and increasing your possessions and increasing your material well-being in this world, you'll become steeped in that. Torah study will no longer have the same importance. Your worldly possessions will take on far more importance. You'll become involved more and more in this world, and you'll stop learning Torah. That's obvious, and that makes sense. But it's from stage two to stage three that becomes a bit difficult to understand. Says Rashi that if you stop learning Torah, automatically you'll come to serve idols. Now that does not make a lot of sense. Meaning, let's assume for a minute I got it. I understand why I'm here. I went to yeshiva enough years, and I finally got it. I'm here for a few short years, and I understand that at the end of my days, I'll answer to Hashem for what I accomplished. Right now, I got caught up in this world. Okay, I got a little bit too involved. My business became successful. I started acquiring money, possessions, and all that good stuff. So as a result of that, I stopped learning Torah. But how does that bring me to serve idols? I stopped learning because I got involved in my cushy position, in my big home, and my fancy car. But why does that automatically lead me to the next step? If I stop learning Torah, I'm going to come to Avodah Zarah. Meaning if I'm involved in this world, it'll stop me from learning Torah. That makes sense. But why can't a person understand why he's here, not learn Torah, but not automatically come to serve idols? And I'd like to see this evening if we could understand why it is that if a person stops learning, just that single change in behavior will bring him to the worst level of averus, the worst level of sin. So let me begin with something that was discussed a while back. In Shmooze number 22, evolution doesn't make any sense. I mentioned the following interesting phenomenon. And that is, on November 10th, 1983, Microsoft announced the new operating system, Windows. And it was a much expected, much much hubbub about the fact that it was to change the way computing was to be. And as it turned out, there was a tremendous delay. The day that it was announced, there was a certain target date. It was delayed and delayed until finally Microsoft began looking very, very silly. Now, the reason why the launch was delayed was because initially when they planned the program, they assumed that it would take 6 man years to write the coding of the program. What that means is if a man works 40 hours a day, assuming he puts in 2,000 hours, they were assuming it would take 6 man years to write all the coding that was going to go into Windows. In reality, it took 90 man years. They found that they were so behind that they put on new teams. It took 90 man years to write the coding for Windows. Now, the reason why that's interesting is because nowadays when computer programs are launched, they no longer talk about decades in terms of 20 man years or 90 years. They talk about hundreds, if not thousands, of man years to write the coding involved in various computer programs. And what that means is teams and teams of men working. Obviously, no one knows all of the coding. A certain team writes a certain part of it that becomes integrated with another team. And after thousands of man years, they put together amazingly complex computer programs. Arguably, the greatest technological feat of mankind to date is the space shuttle. They estimate that the amount of computer programming that is involved in a single space shuttle is 22,000 man years. There are so many different systems and so many intricate different parts that have to work harmoniously for a successful probe that, again, it takes about 22,000 man years to write all of the coding. Now, the reason why that's very interesting to me is because if you would ask any biologist, any chemist, any neurologist to compare the complexity of the space shuttle to a human baby, they would tell you there's no comparison. The complexity of a human baby so far outshadows anything of the space shuttle that they can't be discussed in the same sentence. And yet, the baby came from two cells. The egg cell, which is the smallest visible cell, it's basically the size of a tiny, tiny head of a pin. The sperm cell, which is 100 times smaller. Within those two cells is all of the coding for the human baby. And as we know, it's not even the cell, it's the subatomic particles in the DNA, something that's so microscopic that a 10,000 time amplification, you can't even see it. All of the coding for the wisdom of a human being is on something so microscopic, well beyond 22,000 years of coding. And the question is, who wrote the coding? When a person thinks about that, they understand that there's an awful amount of wisdom that goes into human life. And I want to share with you some observations on this topic that I think will change a certain perspective that we have. Let me start with one observation. Many Ashkenazic Jews are lactose intolerant. What that means is somewhere at the age of 18 or 20, they'll drink a nice tall glass of milk, and 2 hours later, and all of a sudden they discover, I'm Jewish, lactose intolerant, and they're in trouble. Now, what is that phenomenon? Lactose intolerance is basically, there is an enzyme called lactase that's needed to break down the proteins in the milk, the milk sugars. For some reason, Ashkenazic Jews have some symptom that they cease producing that lactase. Hence, when they drink milk, it sits in their stomach, it begins forming like cottage cheese and starts rotting, and after about 2 hours, they have all different issues and stomach problems that ensue. Now, that's a very interesting point to understand, that there's a specific enzyme that's needed to break down milk. But that's not the same enzyme that's needed to break down meat, nor the same enzyme that's needed to break down fats, nor carbohydrates. The meat and potatoes that you eat each have their own specific enzymes, like a lock and key. Each enzyme is a specific, exact chemical formula to break down that type of food. Now, does anyone here know how to synthesize an enzyme? Anyone know the chemical formula of an enzyme? Well, you don't have to worry about it because your body does. And without your being aware of it, without your thinking about it, what your body does is it takes apart foods. It breaks down chemically, takes apart foods, and reassembles it. not only does it reassemble it, it reassembles it into new parts. It regrows. There are sinews, muscles, bone, skin that regenerates every moment in your body, because your body is an extraordinarily complex chemical factory that's ongoing with a tremendous amount of intricate harmonious balance, all the parts working together. Your body absorbs food, your body grows, and your body does an amazing amount of complex activities unbeknownst to you and I. And within the human body, there are many, many systems, many, many organs, all of which function without my being aware of it. Anyone know what bile is? Anyone know what particular organ synthesizes bile? Okay, now if you do know that the liver synthesizes it, please tell me the chemical formula of bile. And I looked it up. And even after looking it up, I couldn't figure out what it was. But it doesn't matter, because my body automatically knows to create it, knows how to synthesize it, knows how to put together the exact formula needed to do the jobs it does. Now, here's another observation. The ancient Chinese had a very cruel mean of torture. They would tie a person up, a person they really didn't like, and sew the eyelids open. Now, what would happen is, when this person couldn't move and his eyelids were sewn open, he could not blink. Within a very short amount of time, he became blind. I'll explain to you why. Most of the eye is liquid, forms of water. The eye has tear ducts. What the tear ducts do is the tear ducts secrete the saline solution, the perfect amount of liquid and the perfect salts and the various chemicals that are needed, and constantly irrigates the eye, keeping it moist. Our eyelids, when we blink, actually what that does is it spreads the tears. And so as a result, the tear ducts, which are in one part of the eye, the eyelid blinking spreads it. Even at night, when you're not blinking your eye, it's either the rapid eye movement or in general, the eye movement that's moving across the liquid. Hence, the ancient Chinese, who were aware of this, would sew open the eyelids. Because the person could not blink, the eye would dry up in a few hours. And I've seen this. I've seen pictures of a human eye after being exposed to air for a few hours, and it crumbles like tissue. Because without the moisture, without the liquid, all it is flaky little tissues. It just disintegrates. And it is an amazingly painful torture, which the ancient Chinese were privy to. Now, I found this phenomenally exciting when I then discovered one other feature in the human body. You ever get a little itch in your ear and you go like this and you realize that there's earwax? I find earwax amazingly interesting, and I'll explain to you why. The eardrum also requires constant irrigation. It's a sensitive tissue, almost, not quite, but almost as sensitive as the eye. It also must be moist all the time, but there's no movement to the eardrum. The eardrum is a membrane. The bone kind of nudges up against it, but there's no eyelid. There's no movement there. How does it stay constantly irrigated? It just so happens that the body secretes earwax, which at body temperature sort of just gently sort of smears across the membrane, ever so gently covers it, but remains in place. The perfect viscosity that at that temperature smears across and remains in place. Always replaced, always keeping it moist at any given time. Now, do you know the balance of fats and oils that have to be in that secretion? Do you know the exact viscosity that has to be at the exact temperature of the inner eardrum? You may not, I may not, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who created the heavens and the earth, did. And with an amazing, amazing amount of wisdom, made this thing called the human body. And this very, very complex chemical systems, many systems that are constantly regenerating, constantly growing, constantly changing, is the human body. Now, if you don't hear this yet, I'll give you one more mushel that I think opens eyes. You go away for a vacation for 2 weeks, and you come back and you find that your cleaning lady did you a big favor. She figured, you guys are away. Why should you waste all the electricity? So she pulled the plug on your fish tank. After 2 weeks, you come back and the place stinks, and you see dead fish floating to the top, the water's putrid, and you realize what she failed to understand is that if there isn't constant oxygenation, if there isn't constant oxygen being put into the water, if there isn't constant filtration taking out the garbage in the water, the fish will die because it's a very delicate balance in the fish tank. Well, gentlemen, here's a very quick observation. Within the chemical factory of the human body, there's also a very, very delicate balance. Yet we have exact and specific filters that are created and do a very good job at cleansing it all out. There's an organ called the kidney whose primary function is to clean, to filter. There are many different features in the body that cleans out the waste. Not only do we eat food, not only do we break it down, not only do we regenerate new tissues from that, there are waste products that are perfectly filtered out. And when you study the complexity of life called my existence, at a certain point you say to yourself, oh my goodness, if this is the creation, what does it tell me about the Creator? And I think that concept brings a person to a real sense of Yirat Shamayim, a real sense of appreciating the wisdom of Hashem, and the wonders that Hashem created in this world, specifically in my life, in my body. Now, this is no secret that this is a wondrous thing called the human body. It's Halacha in Shulchan Aruch, and Simon Vov, the Machaber, says, Shulchan Aruch says as follows, Kishyetzi mibeis hakisei, when a person leaves the bathroom, Yivarech, he should make a blessing, Sheyotzas Adam b'chochma, Hashem, you form man with wisdom, and listen to the words of the Machaber, it's wondrous wisdom with which Hashem created the body. And you'll excuse me for a moment for paying attention to the words of this bracha, and we'll read it together because I think it's a very interesting illustration. Baruch Ata Hashem, blessed be you, God, Elokeinu, our God, Melech Olam, King of the World, Asher Yotzer Adam B'Chochma, who formed man with wisdom. Uvarovo nikovim nikovim, Hashem, you made many, many openings. I was zocha to see a heart valve. They now have this most amazing photography now where they're able to show you live a heart valve opening and closing inside a human heart of a live human being. I don't know how they do this, but I saw it and it was frightening. And what was frightening is the two forms of the two parts of the valve meet exactly. They close perfectly. You see, all of the blood, when the heart squeezes, all of the blood has to be ejected. If any of the blood leaks back in through the valve, that's heart attack city. The heart perfectly pumps it all out, empties it out, the valve shuts tight and forms a perfect, perfect mesh. 100,000 times a day, it hits exactly. All the blood out, seals, all the blood out, seals. If ever it's off, even by a tiny, tiny amount, the blood starts leaking in and the body dies. Nikovim, nikovim, many, many openings. Chalulim, chalulim, many, many hollows, many organs. Goli v'yadul ifnei chiseich v'adecha, it is revealed and known in front of your glorious throne. Shemipaseich hachamim, if one of these openings would become opened, or one of them will be closed, will be impossible to stand in front of you. When a Jew says this bracha, it should be said with an amazing amount of humility and awe of the wonders called the human body. But here's the most interesting thing about that bracha. The Rama in Shulchan Aruch, in Simen Vav, says there's a tail end to that bracha that refers to something else. Says the Ramah, at the very end of the bracha, we say, Baruch Ata Hashem, blessed be you God, Rofei Chol Basar, who heals all flesh, Umafli Lasos, and creates wonders. Says the Ramah, these words, Umafli Lasos, who creates wonders, does not refer to the physicality of man. It does not refer to the body, it does not refer to the chemistry, it does not refer to any of the anatomy or any of the structures within mankind. Says the Ramah, this actually refers to something else altogether. And I'd like to share with you what it is that the Ramah says these words, umafli lasos, a wonder that you've created, refers to. And to do that, we have to take a little bit of a slight veer off. The Sefer HaChinuch explains in his introduction that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created this world, Hashem made four types of creations. Four very distinct, very different types of creation. we Western men have a very simplistic view of life, and we see things in one dimension, and we see things on one level. But Chazal tell us that there's far more to the Bria, far more to the creation than just what our eyes see. And again, the Sefer HaChinuch tells us that there were four types of creations that Hashem created when Hashem made this world. The first type of creation is what he calls a Seichel Nivdal, wisdom, pure intellect, pure Seichel, separate from any physicality. In that group are things like Malachim. A Malach, an angel, has no physical representation, is not bound nor limited by physicality. Brilliant, intelligent, insightful, able to see from one end of the world to the other, able to see past, able to see present. That's a Malach. The second type of creation that Hashem created was a Seichel im Guf Kayam, a intellect attached to a physical body. The Sefer HaChinuch explains that refers to the sun, the stars, the moon, the constellations. We know that every physical manifestation has a spiritual counterpart. When Hashem created the sun, it wasn't just the body of the sun. Hashem created a spiritual counterpart to be in charge, to be the one to guide that sun. Hashem created a spiritual counterpart to the moon. If you remember from Shmuz 83, the moon was jealous. We discussed that the Rambam says that each of the heavenly bodies have a spiritual manifestation that control the orbits, that control their movement. If you pay attention in Shabbos davening, after Baruch Hu, we say the words in Kelodon, Sasim Usmeichim, they are joyful and happy with their going out. That refers to the spiritual entity. It's not a malach, but it controls the movement attached to the physical entity of the heavenly bodies. That's the second type, Seichel Guf Kayam. The third type of creation that Hashem made is a guf without a seichel, a body without intelligence, and that refers to the animal kingdom. As much wisdom as you think you see in the animal world, there is no wisdom. When the chipmunk puts away the food, when the squirrel puts away the nuts for the winter, it does not know the winter is coming. There are instincts, there are desires. When the bear puts on another 20% of body weight in the late August, it doesn't know that it's going to hibernate. It has instincts, drive, desires. Even when you see complex, in the chimpanzee's world or the baboon world, when you see complex tribal behavior, it's all instinct. There's no thought. There's no das. It's a guf without a seichel. And then we come to the fourth type of creation. The fourth type of creation, which is Adam, is very different than all the others. That is a seichel and a guf mixed together. Adam and Adam only is a combination of brilliant seichel mixed with a guf. But unlike the stars or the sun and the moon where the seichel is separate, here the guf and the seichel merge into a new entity. That phenomena brings about two interesting metziuses. Let me share with you what it is that Adam has that no other Bria has. You ever watch a baby? It's very interesting to note. The baby, somewhere about, I don't know if it's 4 weeks or 6 weeks, the baby makes an interesting discovery. It starts flailing around, all of a sudden it, oh, it's a hand. And hit me again. Oh, hey, wait a minute, I did it. Wow, I can make it move. Oh. Now the baby doesn't exactly go through the thought process of I can make it move, but it begins discovering that it has limbs and it can control its limbs. As the cognitive processes develop more, it can start controlling the limbs and start controlling its motion. Somewhere between 6 months or a year, depending on who you ask, it develops a very clear understanding that it is an entity separate from its mother, separate from its surroundings. It gets an identity of its own. Now, if you've ever been zocher to watch the intelligence, the personality of a child emerge, it's a fantastic exhibition. No one taught it to be who it is. No one taught it to be the personality that it is. It emerges intelligence, but not just intelligence, with desires, aspirations, with a personality very distinct. And if you're zocher to have more than one child, you'll note that it doesn't depend on birth order, it doesn't depend on anything other than children have unique temperaments, unique personalities, they have a rotzon of their own. That quality called rotzon does not exist anywhere in this world with the exception of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Odom. Ratzon means identity, will, desires, aspirations. See, as brilliant as a malach may be, there is no ratzon. The malach is pre-programmed. The malach does what it was told to do and cannot disobey the will of Hashem because Hashem created it. It is a seichel nivdal. It's separate, but it follows exactly. If you have a board one day and you would like to contemplate one of the deepest philosophical questions that I know, it is, how is it possible to create something with a ratzon of its own? If you think about it, if you write a computer program, the computer program does exactly how what you programmed it to do. Go left, go right, if this happens, then this, if this, if this. And all of the science fiction novels in the world where they try to imagine they created a robot and the robot got a will of its own, if you think about it, you'll quickly see it's philosophically impossible because it's all pre-programmed, it's all designed by the creator to do exactly what it was created to do. One of the great wonders of creation is the fact that I wake up in the morning and I have desires. I wake up and I wish to do something. I have an identity. I have an existence called me. That is one of the greatest creations of the world. And that creation is extraordinarily complex. You ever wonder why it is that people do such strange things? Just when you figure them out, they do such very, very unexpected things. And then when you study them and you realize that you too are one of them, and you try to understand what makes me tick, what makes me do the things I do, why did I do that? I didn't want to do that. And you start realizing that there are many, many desires within me, many, many issues going on. There are memories, there are base desires, there are higher desires. And the human being is an extraordinarily complex entity. If you don't quite understand this, think about the question the next time you go to sleep. Think about it when you get up. Why is it? When you went to sleep, you were furious, angry at somebody, and you knew fully well you're so angry, yet you also knew that when you would go to sleep, you'd wake up in the morning and the very same you would no longer feel that anger. Right now I'm consumed with anger, but I'm going to go to sleep and I'm no longer going to be angry. When you start studying your different moods and the different things and what's going on within you, you'll quickly see that the human is extraordinarily complex. If you believe that the human body is complex, says the Rama, that is correct. But there's a part of the human that's far more complex, and that is the I that I'm speaking to you. The I that I'm speaking to you have different desires, different needs, changes, and that is mafli lasos, that is a wonder. Tying together the different parts of the human, not the physicality of man, but the I, the spiritual part of man, the nefesh abahami, the nefesh sikhli, ever changing, ever with different desires and ever in a constant mode of change. That is a wonder, says Ramah, greater than the physical part of man. Now, one of the great secrets to understanding I is that I am ever changing. We like to think of ourselves as a rock. Basically, I get it. I know I am here, I know what I'm about to do, and I am a very logical, concrete rock. I'm just going to go about it. And the reality is that the human isn't a rock. The human is changing, the human is constantly changing. And I want to share with you something I find very, very interesting. There's something called Kirillian photography. Now, Kirillian photography measures auras. What they've done is they've taken pictures of people after they went to the mikveh, and they took a Kirillian photograph and they found almost a halo around the person. Before the mikveh, regular, a different aura after the mikveh. They took a picture of a person wearing tefillin, also a different aura. Now, I'm not interested myself to know whether it's real or a hoax, but I do say as follows. The human being, if you and I had a kedusha spectrometer, if we could measure the holiness of a person, you know what we'd see? Not change on a weekly or monthly basis, change on a daily basis, change on a moment-to-moment basis. Because when I speak, when I think, when I do, there are two parts to me, and there's a constant motion, and there's constant change, and the I am speaking, I'm constantly changing the balance. We may not see it, we're oblivious, we see physicality, we live in a very physical mode, but if we were tuned into that level, tuned into that spectrum, we'd see a very different world. We'd see the human ever changing. One interesting observation about the neshama of man If man were left to his own devices, very quickly he would be a behemoth. I'll share with you an interesting statistic. They now say 59% of children under the age of 6 are overweight. 74% of infants under the age of 6 months are overweight. Now, you ever wonder? 74% of infants under 6 months of age are overweight. Why in the world would that be? That doesn't make sense. Babies don't exactly go to the Snickers bar. They don't go to M&M's. And the answer to that is because 64% of Americans are overweight. We are a society of overweight people. Wherever you walk, you see people with a big baich, big stomachs. 64% of the U.S. population are overweight. And what that means in plain language is the mothers who give birth to the babies typically are overweight. But what's astounding is that we're overweight, yet undernourished. Typically, if you're overweight, that means you eat too much. You're overnourished, right? How are you overweight and undernourished? The answer is because the average American eats a lot of junk. Now, that's a very interesting thing to think about. You see, the point is that when Hashem created the Adam, Hashem made Adam very different than any other behemoth. Any other behemoth on the planet has instincts, has desires for the good of the behemoth, and they're basically pre-programmed for success. Adam was made in a very different form. Adam was given instincts, desires. He was also given a seichel to control it. If man uses his seichel, resists impulse, he lives a very comfortable, happy life in this world. He grows and he becomes a successful human. If man just gives in to his instincts, then he ends up with either a big beer belly or whatever the issue is. Now, my interest isn't your waistline, but I find a very interesting and compelling concept here. And that is something that the Sefer HaChinuch says, and that is that if a human being will not learn Torah, what will happen to him is he will become more behemoth, more behemoth, more behemoth. As a matter of fact, if you want a comparison, just like the human eye needs constant irrigation, needs constant watering, the neshama of a Jew needs constant infusion, constant energizing. And if a Jewish person is not learning Torah, what will happen is much like the eye that just starts to shrivel and eventually just becomes smaller and smaller, the neshama of man is ever changing. And if a person just goes about his business knowing full well, having various deus, various understanding, but doesn't constantly infuse his neshama with Torah, it's going to shrivel, it's going to shrink level after level, like the membrane of the eardrum, like the eye, it'll shrink until it becomes a shriveled, shriveled, minuscule part. My friends, I believe that that's exactly what Rashi is telling us. You see, you could be an intelligent person and you could really get it. You can know why Hashem put you on the planet, learn many years in yeshiva, I got it down pat. But if you're not involved in Torah study, then your neshama is shrinking, shrinking on an hourly, daily, weekly basis until you're a very different human being. Intellectually, you may not be, but in your mode of operation, in the eye who speaks, you've changed, you're different, and you're no longer the same individual, and you'll come to do many, many things you never dreamt of doing. In the time of the Chumash, the ultimate Aveira was Avodah Zarah. After the destruction of the second base of Mikdash, it's no longer that. We have a whole other host of things, but there's a guarantee. If you're not involved in Torah study, you'll come to many, many things that you never would have dreamt of, never would have thought of, because your neshama is changing, constantly shrinking, shrinking, shrinking. And in fact, the human being needs a constant infusion of Torah. I'll share with you something that Mesillas Sharm says. Mesillas Sharm says, if you want a mushel, you want to leave a man, an intelligent man, but allow him to lead his life without thinking, without contemplating, without growing in Torah, he says a mushel. It is a mushel to a blind man. Imagine you have a blind man who's walking on the riverbanks. Imagine the Hudson River, high embankment, and you have a blind man who's walking on the edge of the river. And he's just sort of walking. Says Mr. Lashem, what are the odds of him making it out alive? His damage, his detriment is far closer than his success. That is a mushel to going in this world without thinking, without learning Torah. Because if in fact a human being is smart, intelligent, has a head about them, but is not involved in learning, they're changing. They're changing because there's a wonder called the human body, but there's a greater one that's called the neshama. And that neshama, which is I, whom I'm speaking to, am constantly changing. If I'm not growing, if I'm not increasing, if I'm not constantly infusing my neshama with Torah, it's shrinking, 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 and I will feel differently. The same way I get angry, furious, the same way I get jealous, the same way I'm filled with passion, I will change and I will feel things differently, I will relate to things differently, and I will be a different sort of person. And in fact, the reality is that a Jewish person requires a daily dose of Limud HaTorah, of Torah study. And without it, they're not going to be the same. And I want to share with you, I think that there are two different concepts in learning. One concept that we're all familiar with is something called holding and learning. Holding and learning means that you're involved in Torah study. It could be twice a week, three times a week. You're involved. You're deeply involved in very whatever it may be, each person on his level. One person will be Gemara Pshat Tosas, another person maybe Mishnayos, another person Chumash, but you're involved in Torah study, and that's key and essential. But even if you're there, there's something else that you need, and that is a daily dose of learning. Now, this daily dose of learning does not have to be the Ksos HaChoshen, it doesn't have to be the Nesivos. It can be the most simple level of learning Torah, but it's got to be there. And I heard from my Rebbe, the Reshiva, many times that Torah study can be on many different levels. The Reshiva would say often that if you read biographies of the Gedolim, open an Art Stroll book, that is Musar. If you have a Seder in Shmiras HaLashon, in English, you take an English Shmiras HaLashon, but you learn for 5 minutes, that is learning Torah. Certainly, the concept of holding and learning, being deeply involved in learning, is correct and proper. But aside from that, you have to have a daily dose that you're constantly involved in. And if you don't recognize these words, I'll share them with you. They're words that we say quite often. V'dibarta bam, you shall speak in them. Speak in the words of Torah. B'shiftecha b'veisecha, when you sit in your house. U'v'lechtecha v'derech, when you go in the way. B'shochbecha, when you lie down. U'vikumecha, when you get up. And if you are a wise person and you would like to continue your growth, then I have a simple recommendation. Fulfill the words of Shema. Before you put your head down to rest on your bed, think a Torah thought. It doesn't have to be the deepest Torah thought. It could be a vort and chumash. It could be a halacha that you've learned. Think a Torah thought and train yourself. When you get up in the morning, think a Torah thought. What you'll do is you'll change radically your trajectory. You'll change your path in life, because you're giving your neshama that which it craves. If a human being go through life without eating, he will die. And that's obvious. If you try to survive without drinking, you will die. Everyone knows that. Rashi is teaching us a huge chiddush. Just like the physicality of man needs nourishment, so too does the neshama. Hishamru lachem means be very careful. Keep your eyes on the prize. If you keep friends who are into physicality, if you keep friends who are into the big house, the fancy car, all the luxuries, you will come to value that.
You've been listening to The Shmooze, presented by Teferis B'nai Torah. For more information on The Shmooze, please visit us at www.theshmooze.com, where you can download all the Shmoozin free of charge, as well as view source sheets and address questions or comments on this or any other Shmooze. The Shmooze is completely funded by private donations. We need your help to continue our work. All donations are tax deductible and count as miser. Please help us help others by calling 866-613-TORAH. That's 866-613-TORAH. Or you can make your donation right on the web at www.theshmooze.com.